Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Secrets and Spies presents Espresso Martini with Chris Carr and Matt Fulton.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Espresso Martini. Matt, how are you?
Howdy, Chris. Hi, everyone. I am good. Good to go. Jazzed up today. Let's do this thing. How are you?
Cool. Yeah, I'm good. It's a bit warmer in London today than normal. And it's always this point of year where I'm like, I feel really hot. And I'm like, God, it's going to only supposedly get hotter. And I'm like, am I going to be able to cope? You know, I'm always, it's that weird point of the year where I'm like, shit, I can't even cope with the weather now. What am I going to be like in a couple of months' time? So we'll see how we get on. I felt very hot today. So
what's the temperature?
Off the top of my head, I have no idea at this point, but I can soon find out. Hang on. What is the temperature?
You know, it's an odd, while you're looking that up, so it's an odd thing with like heat and stuff in the summer times over there, because so like the summer that I spent over there, I got over there around now. I was there from like May to like the end of July, right? And it was odd because I think it never really got hotter than like 80 or something, which I think is like about like 30 Celsius, I think.
Yeah, well, today it's 24, which is 75.
Okay.
So, and it's kind of muggy. So I think that's the problem in England. It gets very muggy.
Right. See, so I remember like, so I worked for, I interned for a member of the House of Commons. It was like me and 3 middle-aged like English ladies in this like old office up in like Normanshaw North there. So learned how to make a very good cup of tea from them. But I remember one of them was like, yeah, it was like 80 degrees out. And she was like, oh, it's a heat wave. And I'm thinking like, that's just summertime. That's just nice. You know, like that's not a heat wave. But then to the same point, like I would get on the tube coming home or whatever, and there's no air conditioning or anything down there. And like sweat, like, yeah. And I'm in like a full suit, like sweating my balls off on the train. And sometimes you would get lucky, because those trains were packed too. Sometimes you would get lucky and you could like sort of hang out where like that rear window is, yeah, by like the door going, oh, yeah, into the next carriage. And it was like a dog like sticking your head out of like the window going down the highway, done like trying to times, get.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was weird. Yeah. Like sweating my ass off, feeling like, oh my God, it's so hot. Yeah. It's so oppressive. And it's, yeah, like, for here, it's just like a nice summer day. I think that's because you guys don't really have air conditioning in many places, because you haven't needed it.
No, it's changing. Certainly, yeah, like the new trains have air conditioning. Private houses less so. Offices, yes, but private houses not so much. That might change over the next few years. I've certainly said to my, yeah, wife a few times each year, I'm like, if we go for another summer like this, we're getting air conditioning. And they're just like, no, we're not. Yes, we are. Yeah, like that. I personally am in the pro air conditioning camp, but then trying to find one that's nice and quiet, that's a different matter. Mm-hmm. But there we go.
Yeah, I know, like, it's, I remember talking about this last summer too, when you had a couple of days that were like up in the high 90s. So that's hot even for, yeah, for here. Yeah. But I mean, here anyway, it sucks when you get, you know, like a week or two of that in a row in like the middle of August or something, but it's not life threatening, because you can get out of it. And that's, I guess, not the case for many places over there.
No. The hottest I've ever been, though, was actually in New York. Was it July 2013 or something? It was so hot, and going on the subway, it was like going into, mm-hmm, an oven. I have never experienced such sort of volume of heat and the air being so thick, and you're like, oh my God. And somehow you, yeah, survive it. Somehow you survive it. But there we go.
Yeah. I remember one summer, like walking around DC.
Yeah.
Like downtown DC. And it was like, it was probably over 100. Mm. And just like the streets were empty. Like it was just weird. It was weird.
Yeah.
That was bad. Yeah.
Well, talk about hot stuff. So on today's show. On today's show, we're going to look at a failed plot to kill President Zelensky, fears of Russian sabotage in Europe, which really could heat things up in Europe. We've got spy plots being foiled in Germany, and awkward talks between the US and China about Vault Typhoon, which is one of China's hacking operations against the West. Then we're going to move on to our Patreon-only show, Extra Shot, and we're going to look at privacy concerns in the age of AI. And then we're going to turn our attention to the plot to discredit democracy. And then we're going to be looking at Putin propagandists in Russia who've been left dismayed as the US finally passes its aid to Ukraine bill. And then we're going to finish up looking at the sad state of the Royal Navy, which has become a shadow of its former self after decades of successive cuts. So to listen to Extra Shot, you'll need to become a Patreon subscriber. Just go to the link in the show notes below and pick the subscription level that works for you. Or go to patreon.com/secretsandspies. So Matt, I think we will start with your piece on the failed plot to kill President Zelensky in Ukraine. I'll hand it over to you.
Sure, yes. This is a drawing from a New York Times article that we have here. Ukrainian security services claim to have thwarted a Russian plot to assassinate President Zelensky and other top Ukrainian military and political figures. Two Ukrainian colonels have been arrested on suspicion of treason in connection with the alleged plot. The plot allegedly involved a network of agents, including the two colonels run by Russia's FSB, aimed at identifying individuals close to Zelensky's security detail to take him hostage and later kill him. Other top Ukrainian officials targeted in the plot included Vasyl Malyuk, head of the SBU, I think it's their like internal security service, and General Kirilo Budanov, head of Ukraine's military intelligence agency, the GUR. Previous assassination attempts against Ukrainian leaders have been reported, with Zelensky claiming to have been informed of more than 10 such efforts. The two accused colonels belonged to the State Security Administration and were recruited before Russia's invasion of Ukraine in February 2022. The plot involved blocking Zelensky's movements and a multi-layered attack on General Budanov. It included drones and rocket strikes and stuff. Yeah. This was planned before Orthodox Easter. Russia has not commented on the accusations. There have been previous attacks on Ukrainian figures, including the poisoning of General Budinov's wife and numerous assassination attempts against Zelensky, which you mentioned a bit earlier. Ukraine is believed to have been involved in the killing of pro-Kremlin voices in Russia, including a car bombing in 2022 and the assassination of a former Ukrainian lawmaker in December. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I think that some in the Russian government think that they, if they kill or capture Zelensky, it will result in a collapse of Ukrainian resolve. I don't know if that would be the case, but certainly killing the leader of your enemy can have a devastating effect. And we've seen that obviously with Bin Laden, etc., that the idea of, in that kind of parlance, is cutting off the head of the snake can suddenly kind of change everything. So I think if Zelensky were killed, it would definitely affect morale, and it could even result in a Russian victory. But I could be wrong, because it could also galvanize the Ukrainians and their allies. Because I think if Zelensky were killed, even if it was a rocket attack, or whether it was like in this particular plot, whether it was one of his sort of so-called bodyguards, I just think the outrage from the international community might well change things in Ukraine's favor. I mean, Ukraine's in a pretty good position with the international community, but there have been, it is wavering. Obviously, US support's a bit all over the place at the moment because of House Republicans, etc. And there are some people in Europe who, some governments are kind of questioning whether they can maintain things or not. And if obviously Zelensky were killed, I have a feeling it could change things. It would be a real game changer, both for good and bad. Obviously, I do not wish Zelensky to be killed. That'd be the last thing I want, because I'm very impressed by Zelensky, and I think I would sort of slowly already lose my faith even further in humanity if he were killed. So I don't think that would be good. So the article did say, however, that there've been like 10 other foiled plots to kill Zelensky. So maybe Putin is happy now to run the risk associated with killing Zelensky. I mean, the Russians have the capability right now just to bomb the bejesus out of the Ukrainian headquarters and kill Zelensky pretty much whenever they want. And I've always been a little bit surprised why they haven't. But again, what I was saying earlier, early in the war, you know, that might well have changed things. So I think, and I don't know with this one, this particular plot was an interesting one because it seemed to be something to try and impress Putin, because it was supposed to happen before his inauguration as the dictator stroke president of Russia, you know, in the fake election that just happened. And so whether there's somebody in the Russian security services who are trying to curry his favor by handing him the gift of all gifts of killing Zelensky, or he could end up, you know, they could have ended up handing Putin an absolute nightmare. Who knows? Now, obviously, targeting the head of Ukrainian intelligence does make a very effective target. And I think, you know, probably would have a devastating effect on Ukrainian intelligence operations if he were killed. And certainly his wife was targeted last year by poisoning, wasn't she? And they're still unclear whether he was the target or whether the wife was, and whether it was a warning or not. So, and again, with him, they were planning to bomb him with rockets or drones. With the Zelensky plot, so the scary thing with that one, that the people who were arrested for this recent plot were connected to the State Security Administration, which is kind of the equivalent of the US Secret Service, because the State Security Administration is tasked with protecting diplomats and public officials. And so it's sort of, it's like recruiting somebody from the US Secret Service to kind of potentially kill or kidnap the president. And that's pretty serious stuff. So thank goodness that the Ukrainian intelligence service are kind of on the case and have foiled this plot. And I just, I just hope they manage to keep foiling them, really. Because, I don't think they're going to stop anytime soon, are they?
No. Yeah. I mean, I think next to helping Trump get back in the White House, assassinating Zelensky is probably the quickest and most cost-effective way for Putin to win the war, you know? To your point, it's odd that we haven't seen more serious attempts on his life, from like the very beginning of the invasion. Like you were talking about.
Well, there was supposedly one that was foiled, wasn't there? It was supposed to involve Russian special services.
There was. Yeah. I'm not sure how much has gotten out about this. I recall looking into this a bit earlier and couldn't really find anything all that satisfactory, at least that I would have wanted to see. But there were some reports, I believe, that a Spetsnaz team tried to insert into the middle of Kyiv, like right at the beginning of the war, to kill Zelensky, and they got into a firefight and they didn't succeed. But I remember, to be clear here, I'm not giving the Russians like advice or trying to like, you know, I'm just saying like objectively, okay, if I were them, you know, what would I do? Like, I remember that video early, this was early on in the war. There was that video that Zelensky put out. It was him. I think Budinov was there. The prime minister was there. The defense minister there. They were all in front of like the presidential offices, that compound, right? In the middle of Kyiv. And he was saying, it was a very badass video, but he was saying like, we're all still here. We're not going anywhere. And just from looking at the background, like I could pinpoint on Google Maps exactly where they're standing. And I'm just thinking like, I don't know, like if I'm the Russians, I would want that whole compound like flattened on the opening night of the war. Yeah. You know, I probably wouldn't have even bothered sending in a Spetsnaz team. I just would have flattened the middle of the city and had been done with it. And I just don't know why. Again, glad they didn't. But yeah, glad they didn't. And I don't know why they didn't, why they haven't done that.
Well, during the Second Gulf War is exactly what the British and Americans attempted with a quote-unquote decapitation strike against Saddam Hussein. They had intelligence. Yeah. It was at one of his palaces, and obviously the intelligence turned out to be wrong. But they...
Dora Farms. I think that was the Second Gulf War. But yeah, that was like the first... one of the first operational missions for the F-117s. They flew right into Baghdad and just tried to cut them off right at the start.
Yeah, and obviously it's dicey territory, killing world leaders and stuff. And it does make me wonder if there are serious attempts by Ukraine to potentially take out Putin. Will we see that happen, you know?
Well, that makes you wonder, is there some sort of a gentleman's agreement, you know, between the two security services, at least, you know, we won't make serious attempts at senior Russian officials if you don't make serious attempts at ours. At least that's how, I think that's how the U.S. or how the CIA has operated a bit. You know, we don't plan assassinations of foreign leaders or anything because we don't want them to attempt that.
Yeah.
Against us.
Yeah.
You know?
And things, sadly, it feels like certainly in some situations the gloves are slowly coming off because obviously with the Havana syndrome stuff.
Yeah.
Those are attacks against US personnel, et cetera. It's sort of getting into a new, very dangerous time, really, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, I think also, like, you know, what would his death, what would Zelensky's death accomplish on the ground, like for the war? And I think it would absolutely make him a martyr and, you know, totally enrage the West for a time, but that would pass. And at the end of the day, Zelensky wouldn't be there, especially Budinov. Like the GRU has been, GUR has been incredibly effective over the course of this war. Like from an operational standpoint, that's a huge blow. You know, it's like the equivalent of taking out like Qasem Soleimani for the Iranians.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, so yeah, Zelensky would be a martyr. It would enrage us for a time, but Zelensky has proven himself to be a uniquely unifying and charismatic leader that you can't just easily replace. You know, like he has really been Ukraine's best advocate to come here to Congress and explain, you know, why it's important to support Ukraine, to call up Mike Johnson and set him straight. I think that's probably a lot more effective than Biden trying to do it himself. You know, it would be sort of like, I don't know, it would be sort of like to me, like if the Nazis assassinated Churchill in 1940. You know, like, yeah, Churchill would be a martyr, you know, the people would be up in arms, like... but then like, okay, let's say Lord Halifax takes his place and his position is the best thing to do for the country is to negotiate a peace with the Germans. You know, history would have been very different. And that's all that what it took at that was just to get rid of Churchill, you know?
So it just shows these sort of so-called decapitation strikes can have a massive effect. And so I think nothing's ever off the table with Putin. The Russians are brazen enough to do something like that. I mean, we've seen it with assassinations on European and UK soil. You can't get much more brazen than that, really. I wouldn't put it past Putin to attempt it, but I think he would only do it if it suited him and he felt that the risk was worth the reward. So, you know, maybe later
on. Objectively speaking, from his point, I don't see why it's not.
Well, this is it. I think as we get closer to the US election, I have very pessimistic views about the future of Ukraine at the moment, because I think I'm still convinced if Trump wins, because I'm not convinced he will at this point, but it's certainly starting to feel like it could happen. I would never rule it out. Trump could win, and I think it'd be a total disaster. But all that aside, for me, I think it'd be a disaster more for Ukraine than anything, because I think, you know, if it'd be very hard to convince a Trump administration to give more aid to Ukraine. I think Trump probably would cut ties unless there was something clearly in it for him politically to continue on with it. And so that is the point. So I think it's around then, should Trump win or lose, that's when I think there might be a calculus in Putin's mind that it could be worth the risk to take out Zelensky.
I could see that logic. If Trump loses and you're looking at another 4 years of Biden in office and Biden not worrying about re-election and being like, no, I'm gonna beat the fucking Russians in Ukraine no matter what. You know, we got another 4 years to do it, especially if, you know, Democrats pull a hat trick and take control of the House and keep control of the Senate. There's nothing standing in his way. You know, I hadn't thought of that before, but I certainly see that logic in Putin's mind of, let me just get rid of Zelensky at that point. Yeah.
And I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I hope. Yeah. My ambition is so pathetic, but in 10 or 20 years' time, I'd love to be going to the Royal Festival Hall in London and President Zelensky's doing a live talk about his biography of being the president of Ukraine and, I don't know, some leadership book, and we could all learn from his leadership, and I'd like to meet him. That's what I would like to happen. You know, maybe not necessarily in 20 years, maybe be sooner than that, but I would just like to see him continue on to a nice old age. Because for me personally, like, I find Zelensky a very rare breed of politician who's quite inspirational, because I feel like I don't feel in my lifetime has really been an inspirational politician.
Right.
You know.
The Churchill comparisons are totally warranted.
Yeah, definitely. Warranted. Definitely. And obviously
he'll be remembered in that way. Yeah. At least for Ukrainians.
Definitely. And obviously Churchill's far from perfect, but in the English sort of English psyche, is that the right way to put it? But certainly, you know, traditionally speaking, Churchill was considered the man who, if he weren't there, World War II would have gone a very different way. And I agree with that. I think if Churchill was the right man at the right time, was he a saint? No, far from it. And he made difficult decisions that obviously nowadays we can... Is it backseat quarterbacking? Is that the expression, or armchair quarterbacking?
Monday morning. That's so you're confusing. So there's backseat driving and Monday morning quarterbacking. That's it.
There we go. So there we go.
Yeah.
So I blended those two together, but it's very easy these days to do both of those things and refight World War II and think we could have done it differently. So, but I mean, like, one of the interesting choices. One of the dilemmas Churchill faced once, the only reason I know a bit about this, I was working on something a few years ago that touched upon this, but have you ever heard of Mers el Kabir, which is the port where the French fleet were? And is it Algeria? I've lost track now. Mers el Kabir. So the French fleet, so basically when France fell, the French fleet were, the majority of their warships were at Mers el Kabir. And the British were trying desperately to persuade Admiral Darlan, the head of the French Navy, to basically give French warships to the British, to the Allies.
Well, that posed a serious threat to Malta and Gibraltar. And if they had gotten into the North Atlantic to those ships, lanes.
Yeah, they were so advanced that had they got into German hands, those ships could have been a massive game changer. And so Britain, from a logical point of view, we're saying, look, let us, you know, we'll have French sailors on them, but let us take them over so they could be safe and part of helping liberate France. But Darlan, you know, classic English-French antagonism back then, and Darlan really hated the British because his great-grandfather was killed at the Battle of Trafalgar. So you can see that was a bit awkward when the British Royal Navy turned around and said, hey, Admiral Darlan, let us take over your ships.
Different circumstances, but sure.
Yeah, but sometimes you have to put your personal grievance aside for the quote-unquote greater good, and Darlan didn't do that. He dithered, and it became so dangerous that Churchill and the Royal Navy had decided, basically realized that there's only one other choice. If we can't take these ships, we're going to have to destroy them. And that's exactly what they did.
I think the Royal Navy came and blockaded Mirz El Kebir and tried to negotiate with the French extensively with that with him to like, no, please come over, or like fired warning shots and stuff, and like, we're going to kill you all if you don't join us now. And they just wouldn't do it.
No, they wouldn't do it. And so in the end, they got those ships mostly got destroyed or damaged pretty severely. One or two survived. But it's just one of those terrible moral dilemmas that war brings you to, where suddenly you have to bomb the navy of your allies because those ships pose a threat to you. Yeah. And that's the kind of stuff that you have to deal with every day in a war. And so it's not easy, you know. So, yeah.
You know, I'm purely speculating here. I haven't spoken to anyone or read anything that would suggest this, but I would bet that our JSOC, the Joint Special Operations Command, has some advisory or contingency kind of involvement in Zelensky's close protection detail.
Yeah,
I mean, JSOC has some, like when Biden went to Israel right after October 7th, or in trips where, you know, presidents have gone into Iraq or Afghanistan or something, JSOC has been on the ground with the Secret Service as sort of a force multiplier to sort of help if things really go sideways. There's also this isn't classified, you can Google this and it's out there, but there's a program called it's called Power Geyser, and it was codenamed Power Geyser, but it came up a bit in conversation right at the start of COVID. Basically, Power Geyser says that if something happens to the Secret Service's Presidential Protection Division, right? So, like, if they are hit to the extent that they're no longer operationally effective, whether that's through an attack or, like, COVID, you know, infecting most of his protective detail, JSOC steps in and takes over protection of the president. So they have – JSOC has quite a bit of experience and somewhat of a role to play in this, at least for protecting the president of the United States. And I would imagine – that expertise has been offered by JSOC to the Ukrainians in some way. I would be hard for me to imagine that it hasn't been.
Yeah. And also, you never know, it might be American help that helped foil this plot. They, you know, it might have been some signals intelligence that picked up on this, or maybe even an asset deep in Russia who called up their handler to say, hey, this plot's gonna happen.
And that night early on in the war, where Zelensky famously said, like, I don't need a ride, I need ammunition, and I think changed the course of the war that night, just with that alone. I think JSOC was prepared to go into Kyiv while it was a frontline city and extract him to Poland to lead a government in exile.
Yeah, he didn't do Ashraf Ghani.
No.
And that's the thing as well, like, if you, again, like, the comparison of the fall of Afghanistan versus what happened in Kyiv, just so different. Again, why I find Zelensky quite inspiring, really, because it was, everything was there for him to be a government in exile, and I don't think anybody would have held it against him if he had done that.
We were ready to go get him out.
Indeed. So I worry... I'm always worried about Ukraine and Zelensky, but I think towards the end of this year, getting near the elections, is probably where things might get really hot.
Yeah.
Let's hope not. I don't know. I just hope some sort of calm comes out. I don't know. This world feels so chaotic at the moment. So it's, Well, let's look at some Russian sabotage.
Speaking of more chaos.
Yeah. Well, so just to kind of continue on with all that. So, yeah, European intelligence agencies have just issued warnings about Russia's increasing plots for violent acts of sabotage across the continent. And this includes covert bombings, arson attacks, infrastructure damage. And these are often executed directly or through proxies with little regard for civilian casualties. And evidence suggests a more aggressive and coordinated effort by the Kremlin, as reported by assessments from multiple European countries. Intelligence officials are actively raising awareness of the threat to promote vigilance. Recent arrests in Germany and the UK, along with ongoing investigations in Sweden and Estonia, highlight the seriousness of the situation. The uptick in Russian activity prompts concerns about resource allocation, intelligence efficiency, and the need for enhanced countermeasures to detect and prevent further acts of sabotage. Recent events such as the 2023 hack attack on the Germany's Social Democratic Party and attempts to influence far-right European politicians highlight a pattern of increased aggression by Russian intelligence. The expulsion of over 600 Russian intelligence officers post the Ukraine invasion has weakened the Kremlin's spy network, prompting a strategic shift towards reconstructing their presence in Europe through proxies and coordinated intelligence operations. Security services are on high alert, with questions raised over unexplained incidents like the explosions at a munition factory in Wales supplying Ukraine, and the recent fire at a Berlin munitions factory also linked with Ukrainian supplies. These incidents are seen as potential practice runs, not only to aim to create disruption, but also to serve disinformation purposes and provide insights for future attacks aiming to destabilize Europe. So yeah, so things are heating up here. Matt, I don't know if you have any thoughts on any of that.
Yeah, I think this is a development that warrants serious attention from European security services. I mean, we've discussed on this show in the past Russian sabotage operations in Eastern Europe, some that long predate the war. I think Michael Weiss and The Insider and Christo Grozev, like that crew, is a lot to show. Yeah.
There was a truck full of ammunition that had bombs in it, and it went through quite a few places.
Right. And like, this is in the, right, like the Czech Republic and Bulgaria. Was there one in Moldova,
I think,
too?
So. I think so. And if that had gone off in any of those cities, that would have been devastating.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But this seems to be the first indication, at least, has been disclosed this widely, that Russia is targeting the industrial bases of major European powers like Germany and perhaps the UK, right? I mean, I sort of want to relate this in a way to what I said previously with regards to Zelensky. I'm not giving the Russians advice here or saying that they have a point or a right to do so, but just from a realistic, like, let's look at this rationally. I mean, I say this all the time, not just in regards to Ukraine, but with all sorts of life issues I think this applies to. But if you throw a punch, you need to be prepared to take a punch back. You know, Western intelligence agencies are conducting, I think it's safe to say, some extensive and unprecedented sabotage campaigns aimed at disrupting Russia's capacity to wage war in Ukraine. Of course, the Russians are going to respond in kind. Like, it would be malpractice of the GRU and the SVR not to at least try, you know? Mm. I think so. Then it's incumbent upon us to disrupt these plots, you know? It's their job to try. It's our job to stop them.
Mm. Well, they're on a war footing now. This is what happened in World War II. You know, people, either the Luftwaffe were directly bombing British factories or there was German sabotage going on, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I think in concentration camps and stuff, right? They were printing like super authentic counterfeit currency that they wanted to airdrop into the UK to destroy the value of the pound.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think to your point of what you were saying earlier about, you know, what happens if Trump loses and Putin's looking at another like 4 years of continued Western support for Ukraine kind of assured, perhaps upping these efforts becomes more attractive to him. You know, if he realizes that there isn't some sort of silver bullet that he can fire to win the war, like, you know, Trump getting elected or something.
No, indeed, indeed. So there might be more of this to come. Well, since this story initially broke, the British government has announced new plans to expel some staff from the Russian embassy and to close several diplomatic sites across the country. So Russia's defense attaché is accused of being an undeclared military intelligence officer, and he is to be expelled from the UK. His name is Colonel Maxim Elevik, and he sounds a bit French now, but anyway, Maxim Elevik. And he appears to have been in the UK since at least 2014. So, you know, he's been here a good 10 years. And if he is an intelligence officer, you can bet he knows and is intimately connected to Russian operations in the UK that have been happening over the last 10 years. And that may even include the attempted Skripal poisoning. Now, one of the so-called diplomatic sites to be closed is a 50-bedroom mansion in the village of Ticehurst in Sussex, and it's called Seacock's Heath, and it looks really nice. And it shot to fame in the late 90s when Russian guard dogs savaged 50 local sheep. And having a quick look at the property on Google Maps, it does look amazing. And apparently the Russian government had been there since 1946.
Is it like a retreat residence for the embassy staff?
Exactly, yeah. So Russian staff go there for personal breaks. And in recent time, villagers who live locally to it have now been sort of, it's been the focus of pro-Ukraine protests by locals from the village.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a lot of Cold War history connected to that building. And when it's closed, I do wonder if it'd be possible to get a little peek inside, but that might be a bit.
Those sort of retreat residences for Russian embassy staff overseas have kind of been a very niche interest of mine. So there's one that we closed, I think it was after Crimea. It's called Pioneer Point, which is on the eastern shore of Maryland on the Chesapeake Bay, maybe an hour or so from D.C. Mm. That was closed. There is another one in the U.S. It's on Long Island. It's an old, like, Gold Coast mansion. I think it's called Kenilworth, off the top of my head, that's used by the Russian mission to the U.N. I'm not sure if that was closed or not off the top of my head. I want to say I think it's still open because it's the UN, so it's like a different diplomatically, thing. Legally, it's kind of like a different status.
Yeah, there was one in San Francisco, wasn't there, or near San Francisco?
The consulate in San Francisco, I know, was closed.
Yeah.
Because beforehand, they were pictures of like the chimneys. There was lots of smoke coming out of the chimneys. They elected a new pope.
Yeah. Allegedly, that's been happening. Journalists apparently have seen similar sort of things going on at Seacox Heath. There's been some alleged burning of materials there.
There's this gorgeous old mansion and a few acres of parkland on the Bosphorus in Istanbul.
Yeah.
That's a retreat for the Russian consulate there.
Yeah.
That mansion will feature prominently in upcoming volumes of my Active Measure series.
Nice. There we go. Cool. Yeah. Cool. Oh, that's good. I don't know what happens to these. Whatever happens to these diplomatic properties, do they get sold or they just stay closed?
They just, I don't know, at least in the U.S., I don't know if we legally have the right to sell them. Mm. I think the State Department and the FBI just sort of forced them to close and they're just sort of like just mothballed, shuttered. Yeah. Like the Iranian embassy in D.C., It's been sitting empty since like 79.
Wow.
I'm not sure who comes along and like mows the grass and stuff. I've walked past it a few times and it's not like it's clearly closed, but it's not like fallen down.
Maybe
or
there's
anything.
A State Department purely for this task to mow lawns of closed diplomatics.
Maybe that would be a good article or something. Yeah. Like,
there's definitely going to be something to look
that.
Into that. Maybe I have to ask Shane Harris. He'll probably know what happens.
I could text him. I might do that later.
Yeah.
Actually, that's kind of a good idea.
No, definitely.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, no. Well, one other note, I suppose, we've kind of said it, but why does Russia conduct sabotage operations? Well, if you can disrupt the manufacturing and supply of weapons, it can really help the Russian war effort. We've already sort of seen how the holdup of US aid to Ukraine has helped. So if you can suddenly start bombing the factories of places that make things, it changes things. It will A, make it, slow down the manufacturing of the weapons, but B, it might even start making political leaders think twice, or at least the citizens of countries will start to potentially lose support for the war in Ukraine if members of the public start getting killed or family members start getting killed. I mean, God, if one of these, if the Russians start planting bombs in the trucks that supply these things, which I doubt they would, but well, they've done it in Europe, but if they did it here, that and it went off, I don't know, somewhere on the M25 or going through London, that would be a disaster diplomatically as well as from a humanity point of view. It wouldn't be so good.
Well, we know that the Russians came very close for a lack of trying to shoot down an RAF. Was it a rivet joint aircraft
over
the Black Sea?
Yeah.
So that's sort of like offensive, like kinetic to the point of like, we're going to kill people.
Yeah.
That's already there.
Well, that happened. At the very time we were recording our first ever espresso martini. All that happened then, while we were on the air, that happened. Wow. And World War III could have kicked off should all that have gone sideways. So
Yeah.
One thing I will add, I can't say much more about it, but in the UK, it's been reported that three individuals have been arrested and are currently undergoing trial on suspicion of carrying out arson attacks allegedly linked to the Russian intelligence services. So keep an eye out on that trial that I think is due to start on the 10th of May. We will see what happens. They may be totally innocent. Who knows? But it certainly feels close to home when people have been arrested on suspicion of such things.
Yeah. I know the laws over there are a bit different than they are here, and that's sort of limiting us from
sadly
talking about it a bit more. I mean, I could probably say it without any issue sitting here, but
yeah, I think I won't
because you and I are here together, and it's right, it's the same show, you and I are here together, it's the same pot of ad revenue that we're drawing from, so I won't do that. But that's why we're not talking about it. If at some point in the future you can talk about it, then we
will. Exactly. Chris has left the room, the podcast, and the edit for Matt to say this bit, and now he's back.
Could get my cat up here as a witness. Yeah. Like, see, Chris left the chat.
He even refused to edit this bit. Yeah, no, our laws in the UK are a bit tighter when it comes to ongoing trials in case we influence the jury. So there we go. So don't be influenced by what we say. Right, let's take a break and we'll be right back.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
So we have German spy plots going on. So there's some stuff we could talk about with that. So, you know, the Russians have been busy. They've been busy bodies for quite some time now, since in the 1940s, really, or earlier. But yeah, so we've got these new current German spy plots going on. And Konstantin von Notz, who's the head of the Bundestag's Intelligence Committee, has issued a stark warning about the ties between Germany's far-right Alternative for Germany party, which is the AfD, and authoritarian regimes. He claims that the AfD's connections have led to almost daily spying plots targeting Germany, indicating a concerning trend of influence and destabilization attempts by autocratic states. Notz accused the AfD leaders of aligning themselves closely with autocratic regimes like Russia, China, and North Korea, all fun places, rather than with democracies in Germany and Europe. He suggests that AfD members are susceptible to being used as pawns by regime to undermine German interests and democracy. And the stark warning came as Germany reels from a series of espionage plots, including one involving a research assistant to the AfD's MEP, who is accused of passing state secrets to China. Notz said, unfortunately, many people in politics, business, and science still lack the necessary awareness of the dangers posed by China and other authoritarian states for our democracy, the economy, and the freedom of science. The AfD, however, has vehemently denied allegations of collusion with authoritarian regimes and espionage activities. They dismiss reports suggesting Russian involvement in drafting parts of their internal affairs manifesto as a cock and bull story, which is quite an English expression there, and the parties portray themselves as victims, claiming to be targeted by mainstream parties due to its surging popularity. The rise of the AfD in German politics, particularly in Eastern Germany, as the concern surrounding its alleged ties with authoritarian regimes, the party's anti-immigration stance and growing popularity have sparked worries about the influence of foreign powers on German democracy and security. So, Matt, do you have any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think it's time to really kind of take seriously and act seriously toward these sorts of European political groups like the AfD and figures who lead them. You know, it's sort of interesting that like the difference in laws between the U.S. and Europe that are like the same differences that would allow me to openly comment on that last case that keep you from commenting on it are also the reasons that your security services could take a much greater degree of action against these groups than the FBI can. You know, it's like the same, essentially the same law, the laws that are just sort of, you know, different sides of that same law. I think it's good though that like the AfD has really seemed to be getting called out internally within Germany. I'm not sure offhand how currently popular they are within the country. I know they have a serious degree of support. I'm not sure how serious. But you know, nearly every autocratic movement in the last few centuries has used democracy to take power and then destroy it. You know, and I'm really kind of sick of us just sort of sitting on our hands and being like, well, what else can we do? You know, and just sort of not actively stop these people from doing so. You know, like enough is enough. It's this weird thing that like if an American or a German or a British politician or something openly parrots Russian propaganda talking points, you know, openly advocates their worldview, their view of the case, that's not illegal. Right? Like that's just speech. That's okay. But if they do it secretly, you know, and meet up with a Russian in a parking garage to hear your talking points that I want you to sort of, you know, move into the body politic somehow, that's where it becomes illegal and that's where you can do it. Like it's an odd aspect of the moment that we've been in for the last, you know, decade or so that people realize that if they just do this shit out in the open, we get sort of we don't really know how to deal with that.
Yeah, well, they're very clever at towing that fine line. You get it with terrorism too. You get these people, these Islamist extremists who know the letter of the law and are very careful not to directly incite violence or to sort of go out and say, go and you know pledge your allegiance to bin Laden or something. They just know if you don't say those things, you can skirt the law. It's the thing we sometimes, you know, like assume that people on the far right or terrorists can be a bit stupid, but they're not. A lot of them are, and especially their leaders, are very smart people.
Right. It's a major pet peeve of mine that people hide behind the protection of certain laws to champion causes and attempt to gain power that would then immediately subvert those laws that they're being protected by. Yeah. You know, it's an especially kind of shitty thing.
It is. And I don't know what the answer to it is, but something, you know, because it seems quite obvious sometimes these people are doing it, and they're I don't know. It is. There's something. Maybe it's my inner fascist coming out, but something somewhere needs to. There needs to be some sort of clause somewhere where I don't know what you'd call that clause. Now you'd prove it, but the hiding in plain sight clause to obviously destabilize democracy. Tricky one, isn't
well,
it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at the start of World War II, Oswald Mosley was like locked up like immediately, wasn't he?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah.
No one dealt with Oswald Mosley walking around the UK all throughout World War II, being like, actually, Mr. Hitler's good. Like this just wasn't tolerated. Like you're gone. Bye.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what would be the situation if there were an open conflict with Russia and America.
That could change things. That could change things, like aid and comfort to the enemy or something if you declared war against this country. I'm not sure how that would work.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting one, that one. But there we go. I'll just add that, you know, I've been saying for a while that Russia is attractive to members of the far right because it presents itself as the savior of the white Christian world and as a force against, God forbid, woke culture. And this makes Russia ideologically attractive to those on the far right. And recent arrests in Germany of members of the intelligence service and military that we've talked about in the past have shown that those arrested did have far right sympathies. And obviously this should be a concern in the UK, Europe and America, because there's a risk that there are far leaning members of our own security and armed forces, and they could potentially pose a security threat. I do sometimes wonder if people still think about people spying for Russia are still kind of left-wing inspired people. Now, left-wing inspired people probably do still sometimes spy for Russia, but I think now it's all shifted. I think the profile is definitely, since maybe 2010 onwards, I suspect that most people who spy for Russia in the West have far-right leanings and kind of buy into their ideology. That is, if they're ideologically motivated. Obviously, it still leaves the room open for financial gain.
Yeah,
and it was the other one, coercion, etc. There's still other reasons why people might spy for Russia. But certainly on the ideological side of things, the far-right seems to be the kind of game in town. And obviously, my recent interview with former MI6 officer turned author Charles Beaumont does go into some detail about that concern. So if you've not heard that interview, it came out last weekend and it's quite an interesting one. And Charles's book kind of does talk about, you know, a member of the British right who has ended up spying for Russia. So it's and for him to come out of a book like that kind of really makes me think that we're probably on the right track with that line of thinking. The other comment that stood out for me out of Notz's comments were about people lacking the necessary awareness of the dangers posed by China and other authoritarian states. And I think certainly in popular culture, more people are suspicious of our own governments and their messaging than they are of authoritarian governments. And I still think that there are a lot of people who are still not very wise to the fact that Russia and China are spending a vast fortune. I think for China, it was something like $7 billion on misinformation operations aimed at the West. So, yeah, so people need to be aware of that. And then with the two German nationals who were arrested recently of plotting sabotage of Germans' military aid to Ukraine, they basically were of Russian origin. So they were doing that for the Russians. So, you know, there is a potential where they might recruit people who have some sort of Russian lineage as well. Not that one should be suspicious of all Russians, definitely not, but certainly there's some kind of pattern there as well. And the espionage threat is not just against military intelligence targets, it's about, you know, it's also looking at technological advances as well. Technological secrets are stolen for a multitude of reasons, but one reason is to save research and development costs. So, you know, anybody who works in a lab or a university that's sort of kind of at the cutting edge of research are going to be targets for Russian and Chinese spies. And there have been many a scandal involving China in the past, especially in the UK. There's been some universities that have been given a warning that they might be a target. And I think there are some people at universities who think this is all old Cold War paranoia, but it really isn't. You know, these sort of things are going on, so people need to be careful of that. And on that note, Matt, you picked out a piece about something called Vault Typhoon.
lots of intrigue and plotting around sabotage operations in this episode. Kind of interesting. Yeah. So,
in that kind of mood today, sabotage.
recent recent high-level U.S.-China talks directly addressed Volt Typhoon, an espionage campaign targeting American critical infrastructure. Nathaniel Fick, the State Department's ambassador at large for cyberspace and digital policy, confirmed discussions during Secretary Blinken's recent trip to China, where he emphasized that risking American critical infrastructure is dangerous and unacceptable. President Biden also discussed Volt Typhoon with Chinese President Xi Jinping. The U.S. and allies reported that Volt Typhoon maintained network access for at least 5 years. This is across, you know, a wider range of infrastructure like power grids, water systems, that kind of stuff. U.S. officials warned of potentially crippling cyber attacks on water, electricity, and military infrastructure in the event of a full-scale war between the two countries. Beijing denied any affiliation with the hacking network. Initially, Fick labeled the behavior a violation of the U.N. cyberspace framework, later stating it contravenes the agreement's spirit. Both countries plan to meet in a third country soon to discuss artificial intelligence issues. Chris, what do you think?
Well, it's an interesting one. Now, first of all, I wasn't really up to speed on what Volt Typhoon was before this article. So just for those not in the know, it's a Chinese state-sponsored hacker group, and it uses malicious software that penetrates internet-connected systems by exploiting vulnerabilities such as weak administrator passwords, factory default logins, and devices that haven't been updated regularly. So do your updates. And Volt Typhoon apparently functions in a similar way to traditional botnet operators who have plagued the internet for decades. And they just look for and take control of vulnerability of internet devices such as routers, security cameras, to hide and establish something called a beachhead in advance of using that system for future attacks. Hope that makes sense, because it almost makes sense to me. So it's an interesting one, this one. And I think, as we said earlier with the spy threat from Germany, Volt Typhoon is another way for China to kind of get hold of secrets. And it also has the potential to cause disruption on a sort of domestic level, because Blinken came out with an interesting comment saying, it's very clear that holding American critical infrastructure at risk, especially civilian critical infrastructure, is dangerous and escalatory, and it's unacceptable. You know, we've seen there's been all sorts of stories about power outages or hacking the NHS and other things kind of going on between Britain and America, and it might well be connected to Volt Typhoon. And, you know, obviously, should God forbid we end up in a direct conflict with China over Taiwan, you know, exploiting the vulnerabilities of infrastructure might well come into play. And so all of this could be just, you know, I guess every military, because I'm sure America does it too, and I suppose it's the responsibility of every military and intelligence services to understand the weaknesses of every kind of country that you may or may not end up in conflict with. And so Volt Typhoon is possibly part of that plan, just to kind of keep on top of what vulnerabilities there are that they're able to exploit, and on top of that, to be able to just steal secrets, because it saves money in research and development if you can steal stuff. And obviously, the Chinese military and their aircraft have a remarkably similar look to a lot of American ones. So definitely something's been going on. And apparently, the FBI said that nearly half of their 5,000 counterintelligence cases are linked to Chinese espionage efforts. So hearing about Volt Typhoon, even though I didn't really know what it was, is sadly no surprise to me, really. And it must have made a very awkward meeting between the Chinese and the Americans.
Yeah, from what I understand, those meetings with the Chinese can be especially kind of infuriating. Mm. They're very good at just acting like a brick wall, you know, when you try to talk to them about these things. Mm. Yeah, you know, I think offensive cyber operations are an emerging facet of warfare that have probably been employed far more often than we realize over the last 10 years. Like, I would bet that since the war in Ukraine started, or since October 7th, there's probably been a few rounds of this stuff back and forth. Like, I'm pretty certain that part of our response to Iran's volley of missiles and drones at Israel involved some sort of offensive action in cyberspace. You know, like, there's one that's been disclosed. We targeted that spy ship that was feeding targeting data to the Houthis. That's just part of it. But this is probably far more prevalent than we realize. And I think there's, because it's not a kinetic, like, it's not something blowing up, you know, that we necessarily don't hear about it when it happens. You know, there's nothing to see, therefore it doesn't get noticed, and then people don't report on it, and we don't have to put out a statement from the Pentagon about it, yada yada yada. You know, when the main enemy are like terrorist groups with limited resources or capabilities, you know, we, the public, don't see the consequences of these operations in our everyday lives. Right. So over the war on terror and everything, it's just not something that would have happened. But I think in a war with a near peer adversary like China, it's likely that at least in the beginning, cyber warfare is something that would become probably very new, would very quickly become familiar to us. You know, it would cause a considerable degree of disruption at home. I don't know. It would be sort of akin to like, I think it would be akin to like American and British cities in World War II turning off their lights at night to protect from German bombers or U-boats. Like I would think there's probably like those like Wi-Fi connected picture frames and stuff, yeah, right? That like can change out stuff from your computer or whatever.
Nanny cams, yeah.
You'd probably have to, right, nanny cams and stuff. You're going to have to throw all that shit out.
Yeah.
It's just a new sort of thing that we would just have to accept here on the home front, and we would just have to, our daily lives would have to change to an extent that I think hasn't been forced upon the public since World War II.
And I'm not sure we're ready for this. I don't think mentally 21st century society is ready for the fact that, I suspect, like in a conflict like that, the internet would be the first thing to kind of go down and probably stay down for the duration of that conflict.
I don't know that like you wouldn't have internet for the entire extent of like a war with China. Like we wouldn't have power or water or something. That's just sort of the thing that like, I mean, there may be disruptions to that, at least in the beginning and maybe here and there over time and more localized circumstances like Guam or Hawaii, you know, would probably be more effective than we are here. But let's say, okay, if you're on the same, if you live on the same electrical grid as Travis Air Force Base, which is like a major power projection platform in California into the Pacific on the West Coast, right? Like you may experience more kind of disruptions because you're close to Travis Air Force Base. Sort of stuff like that. But you know, like every great power conflict has birthed some new type of warfare. I mean, with like World War One, it was like planes and machine guns and tanks and chemical weapons. World War Two had submarines, like strategic bombing campaigns, ballistic missiles, eventually nuclear weapons right at the very end. You know, I think for World War III, that new thing will likely be cyber.
Yeah. Drones, cyber. I mean, what we saw with what we've been seeing in Ukraine and obviously with the recent Iranian action against Israel, you know, that's the kind of stuff that's probably going to happen, isn't it? It's it's interesting. Makes the future of war is going to be fascinating, really.
Yeah, and you also think like it's easier. One's first instinct would be to have this kind of anxiety, like, oh my God, the Chinese are in our systems. Like we're so far behind. You know, blah 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 blah. It's hard to gauge the truth to that anxiety or how warranted it is because we know very little about what we're doing offensively in this same space. You know, like I know there's one cyber operation that was, it may still be, but was on the shelf called Nitro Zeus, which would have, in like a full-scale war between the US and Iran, would have like, it could have like just crippled Iran's critical infrastructure. Wow. I mean, I see it in sort of the same way as, you know, we're talking about these sabotage, these mysterious fires and stuff that the Russians may be responsible for in Europe. It's essentially the same kind of thing. It's just rather than having like a team on the ground planting the explosives or whatever, or starting the fires, you know, they're sitting behind a computer screen in Beijing in some office building. You know, it's essentially the same kind of thing. You know, we're trying to do it to them. They're going to try to do it to us. It's their job to try. It's our job to stop them. So rather than being like, oh my God, we're fucked. Like, no, it's like, pick your chin up and do the work. They're coming for us. We're coming for them. We got to be better than them.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So I think that's a good note to finish on, really. And I think the moral of today's tale is we just all have to be careful and we have to be better than our opposition. So Matt, thank you very much for your time on this. So we're going to move over to Extra Shot. All you need to do, if you're not already a subscriber, is just click on the link in the show notes or go to patreon.com/secretsandspies and you can subscribe there and get access to Extra Shot. And on Extra Shot, we're going to be covering privacy concerns in the age of AI. Then we're going to be also looking at the plot to discredit democracy. Putin propagandists in Russia left dismayed as US finally passes aid bill to Ukraine. And we're also going to sadly look at the what's going on with the Royal Navy at the moment, which is not in the best of places. So check us out on there. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. And don't forget to follow us on social media. We're just Secrets of Spies. We're on Twitter. We're on Blue Sky. We're on Threads, Instagram. So just type in Secrets and Spies and you'll find us on there. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review, preferably a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice. And thank you very much, everybody. And we'll catch you on the next one. Take care.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening. This is Secrets and Spies.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.